Welcome back to another episode of Speak Up, an Avalon Bay Communities podcast proudly sponsored by our Women's Leadership Network, or WLN. This show is for Avalon Bay associates, WLN members, and anyone seeking insightful conversations that inspire both personal and professional growth. We invite leaders from all industries, backgrounds, and experience levels to speak up about the real issues shaping our workplace and the world around us. Thanks for tuning in.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Speak Up podcast, hosted by Avalon Bay Communities Women's Leadership Network. This episode continues our discussion of lessons in leadership, and we are joined by two very special Avalon Bay senior executives who recently retired at the end of 2024 after impressive and impactful careers. We'll hear more about their professional journeys, including the challenges and triumphs they experienced as women leaders in real estate, as well as their go-to words of wisdom and best practices. My name is Elaine Walsh, Avalon Bay's Executive Vice President of Human Capital and Administration, and I'm excited to kick off a new season of Speak Up with this important topic and these amazing women. Women's History Month is the perfect opportunity to recommit ourselves to championing the next generation of female leaders, and I look forward to getting their thoughts on what it takes to be an effective, empathetic leader in today's environment. So let's introduce our guests. Today, we're lucky to be joined by Joanne Lockridge and Carrie Shea. Joanne most recently served as Executive Vice President, Capital Markets, and joined the company in 1989. Carrie worked as Senior Vice President, Finance and Treasurer, and the Principal Accounting Officer, and joined the company in 2002. Together, they have a combined 57 years of service at Avalon Bay. They've both seen the company grow and evolve over the years, and have mentored and guided dozens of colleagues during their tenure, including me. So let's get started. Welcome, Joanne and Carrie. I'm so excited to be here with you today.
Thanks, Elaine. It is great to be here with you and with the Women's Leadership Network, which we have a soft spot for. And it's wonderful to be joining during Women's History Month. It's an honor.
I agree. Thanks, Elaine.
So since we're talking about lessons in leadership today, let's start with your leadership style. How has it evolved during your career? And did you experience any challenges in finding a style that felt authentic to you?
My leadership style was developed over time. It was a bit of a journey, as it always is. Finance was actually my second career, so I got a bit of a late start relative to peers. And as a result, I was in learning mode for quite some time. Early on, I listened, I absorbed as I built my skill set, and I would have to concede that early on, I wasn't really assertive. I would question myself before I would question the status quo and offer opinions. And as I started to gain experience in my role and tenure with the company, my contributions were at that time primarily through my execution skills, but I began to realize that the knowledge I gained meant that I was often equally, if not more informed than other team members and could offer some alternatives and different perspectives. And this was probably my biggest challenge because I prefer not to be in the limelight, but I knew that if I wanted the team to be successful and the company to do well, I needed to speak up more. And then finally, mid to late career, it became clear that I needed to lead with my front foot more than my back foot. People and teams have always been incredibly important to me as I, you know, worked through my career. And as you manage a team and a process, it doesn't always matter if you're right or if you have the best answer. If the team is not on board, there's really not a certainty for success. So during this period, I realized that leadership is not necessarily about being more assertive. It's about leading through influence. And there's been a lot of talk and research done in this area, but things like including the team in relationship building, taking initiative and encouraging others to take initiative, communicating clearly the why in terms of what's behind the team ask and the team effort. And I truly believe that our behavior, our work ethic, and actions can influence others to follow suit. Leadership is not one size fits all. So being adaptable throughout your career, showing a willingness to adjust your personal style demonstrates versatility and it increases your credibility as a leader.
My style has probably evolved a lot like Joanne's has as well. As I was thinking about this, I thought about when I first came to Avalon Bay. So when I came to Avalon Bay, I had been in public accounting for about 10 years, plus or minus, where I had gotten to see a variety of different clients, different industries. I focused mostly on real estate, but I had the ability to see hospitality, healthcare, And I ran across my fair share of characters and different personalities sort of throughout those first 10 years. Avalon Bay happened to be one of my clients. And so I knew the management team, I knew the culture. And so when I came to Avalon Bay, when I was offered a full-time position, my interview process went fairly easily. And I would tell you, I thought I was just too cool for school. I really thought I was going to come in and based on the 10 years of experience that I had previous, that I would integrate with the teams, I would lead immediately. And it was a very humbling experience for those first few days, first few weeks, when I came in and understood that this was a completely different experience with different needs, and that I had a lot of learning and self-growth to do. And so for me, I'd say the first step sort of in my evolution was when I first got to Avalon Bay, and that realization that each situation is different, and that I needed to arm myself, as Joanne said, with as much information and knowledge and experience as I possibly could. So I needed to listen more. I needed to proactively build relationships. And I needed to learn and absorb as much knowledge as I could, even if it was considered, quote unquote, outside of my lane or in an area that wasn't my comfort zone. And so by doing those things, I could see the bigger picture. I could help navigate roadblocks. I could collaborate. And hopefully all of that would result in more effective leadership. And it's funny, as I say it out loud, it sounds so logical. But it's so easy to get bogged down in the day-to-day and crossing things off the list that sometimes you forget or you don't make the time for things that are important and not urgent. I'd say over the years, similar to Joanne, with time and some experience and role, I did begin to build my confidence back up and I started to use my voice. And I did find myself becoming more courageous, both in handling issues and in stepping outside of my comfort zone and taking on functions or tasks that I really didn't understand or didn't know at the time. So as I think back early in my career, I would never have considered something like taking the corporate oversight of the customer care center. I was an accountant by nature. I didn't know anything about shared service centers, but I put in the work and I enjoyed it and I was fulfilled by it for the last 10 years. So I'm really happy that I did, but I don't think I could have done that early on. The last thing I'd probably point to in more recent years, and I think this is probably just with age and maturity, is that I have tried to be more self-aware and honest with myself about my strengths and my opportunities, and not just how I see them, but how others see them. And you know, some of the best leaders that I've come across really have addressed that and consciously tried to change that, or they've complemented them with people or with process to try to fill the gaps. I'm still not great at it, but it's something that I'm working on. Even though my professional career with Avalon Bay has come to an end, it is still something that I work on today.
That's great. So just listening to the both of you, I heard some common themes early on, just about just being informed, trying to gather information. And then as you progress, building those relationships up and how important it is to form strong relationships. And then ultimately using both of those to have the confidence to really speak up and lead your teams and others on behalf of others, even if they're not your teams directly, you're being a true leader for the organization. So that's all really, really helpful. Last piece of that is stretching yourself, like getting out of your comfort zone. Like I heard both of you talk about comfort zone and something I can personally really relate to. As you move up in your career, you are more in the spotlight and you are put in more situations that are new, right? And that you're not familiar with. And just you have to get over that feeling of being uncomfortable and pushing through that. So let's talk about something that women experience in the workplace, a little bit of a double-edged sword. If we show strength and confidence, we are sometimes perceived as unlikable. And if we show vulnerability, we can sometimes be perceived as weak and ineffective. So how can women show vulnerability, example, empathy, compassion at work, and still be viewed as a competent leader?
It's a great question, Elaine. And it is. It's a hard one to answer because finding the balance is really difficult. One thing that I find interesting, I don't know, after the 2024 Avalon Bay officer meeting, I don't know if either of the two of you signed up for it, but one of the speakers has an email subscription around leadership skills and traits. And so I signed up and I'm still getting the emails. And interestingly, yesterday's email was regarding vulnerability in leadership. And so it was very gender neutral. It was very generic, but it talks about the balance of sharing emotions and thoughts to be able to build stronger relationships and trust. But it cautions on oversharing, particularly around likes, dislikes, fears, et cetera, in case that should sort of instill down into your teams. Personally, I think it's important to show vulnerability of some sort, you know, regardless of gender. I want that in my personal life and in my professional life. I want to be able to say, I don't know to something. I may have to go find the answer, but I don't want to be afraid to say, I don't know. I don't want to be afraid to make a mistake. I think making mistakes should be acceptable as long as you hold yourself accountable and you learn from your mistakes. And so finding that balance in relationships that you have with others, whether it be your teams, your supervisor, project teams, whatever it may be, it's hard to show empathy and compassion, but still drive for results or be likable. You mentioned likability, Elaine. It's one of my issues because I'm a people pleaser. You know, it's what I like to do. And so being likable and then having difficult conversations, it's hard for me. The things that I've found over time, and I have a couple that I would note that I've tried to keep in the back of my head as sort of tools. One, I tend to say things with a smile. So even if it's a hard conversation, I need to control it because you don't want to dilute a hard conversation. But I genuinely believe that a warm smile and genuine warmth to a person can help diffuse an emotional situation if needed. I would say we talked about confidence, be confident, but make sure you listen and respect other people's points of view. I've been told, actually fairly recently, I've received the feedback that at times I can be overconfident, which I bristled at to start with. But when I thought about it in retrospect, it's actually true. And the way it manifests itself is that I will go into a conversation, I will be the first one out of the gate to speak, and I say things in a fact pattern that doesn't leave a lot of room for other people's opinions or points of view. And I didn't know I did it, but now I do. And so I'm working very hard to try and fix that. So make sure you're truly listening and respecting other people's opinions. The third thing that I had was understanding what battles to fight to make sure that you're looking to win the war. Very early in my career, when I was trying to prove myself, our first CFO, Tom Sargent, who you're both very familiar with, he let me know that he thought I argued just to argue. And again, I was not happy with the feedback, but he was right. And it was because I was so young in my career and I felt like I needed to prove the value that I could add, the knowledge that I had. And so every point, whether it really meant something or not, I argued it. And then the last sort of piece of information, I guess, or tidbit that I would have is to try not to react in the moment and be emotional. There's nothing wrong with walking away from a situation and saying, I need some time to think about this. I need some time to digest versus being emotional, which is something that I struggled with early on in my career.
Carrie, that was a great answer. And I think many of, you know, my own thoughts around this issue kind of are all rolled up and were very well said by you. But personally, I don't think that exhibiting vulnerability and being viewed as competent are mutually exclusive, but this is a fraught issue. There has been so much research that suggests that women are under more professional scrutiny. As you said, they're judged more negatively for exhibiting the same behaviors as men in the workplace. And vulnerability doesn't necessarily mean that you're more emotional. I think it means communicating or signaling to others that you don't know everything somehow, some way. And if you're in leadership or new to a leadership position, you may feel like you have to be confident all the time and portray the fact, no weakness. Everyone wants to be seen as competent, strong, capable, but everyone has soft spots. We just don't like to let others see behind the curtain. As leaders, though, if we don't model the behavior we want to see in others, we lose out on an opportunity to be truly effective. And vulnerability does create a more open work environment. It leads to productive teams that can be honest during conflict. And it also creates more courageous teams who are willing to share to take risks, to be wrong in order to be more creative. So while being vulnerable does mean exposing yourself, it facilitates all manner of positive things, new ideas, changes that all propel the company and your teams towards growth. I was reading an article on this topic, and it provided an interesting example suggesting that the brain is described as being vulnerable during pregnancy. And many of us have heard of or personally experienced momnesia. But in actuality, during pregnancy, the brain is changing and adapting to become more capable of other things, additional things like bonding and connecting and nurturing. And it's kind of the same premise in terms of exhibiting vulnerability in the work environment. So, you know, as I thought about how can we do a better job of being professionally vulnerable, to Carrie's point, you know, being vulnerable in your personal life versus your work career life can be very different. Or how do we get more comfortable, at least? I think it's not necessarily about wanting to be well-liked, but rather you change your focus so that it's you want to be well-regarded for your contributions. And you can do it by focusing on good outcomes, on getting outcomes, and keeping an open mind about how you get there, rather than relying on the status quo or the issues, the process that's in place. So really being willing to consider alternatives. It's switching your perspective so that rather than focusing on your work efforts on proving yourself, you're making it about improving yourself and the team. And then finally, all of us, you know, are very concerned, especially early in your careers, about perception management and making sure that you're perceived in the right way. But that, you know, pivoting and changing that focus to one of personal growth and growth for the team is something that I think can help you navigate this area and be vulnerable, but do so in a very constructive way. It is a work in process. We have a ways to go. I think that there are inroads that have been made, and I also think there continues to be increased awareness, focus, receptivity, and discussions in this area. So I think we're moving forward.
First of all, thank you for validating momnesia for me.
Yeah.
But second, very insightful from both of you. When I think about vulnerability, it goes back to like relationships and strengthening the relationships. So, and you both mentioned that, and it's acknowledging that, you know, no one is great at everything and everyone has strengths and weaknesses, and admitting your weaknesses to your team and to those who you work with then allows you to make sure you get the appropriate resources around you so that everyone can succeed. So it ultimately is a way just to open a door to strengthen the relationships of those that you work with. Okay, let's switch gears a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about what you would tell your younger self when beginning your career based on what you know now.
You know, this is always the gotcha question, you know, and I would say that in general, I would tell myself that you should lean into your strengths. We all look at leaders that we respect and revere and say, I aspire to those qualities and I want to be just like that. And that may or may not be possible because no two leaders are alike. Leadership is a reflection of individual talents, and it's a combination of things that come very naturally to us and then some things that are acquired along the way during our career. I've always believed that exploiting your strengths is one of the best ways to be successful and to build trust with others that you work with. That being said, there are two quick things that I have told both of my daughters as they embarked on their own careers. And so I'll share those. The first would be prepared. Always be prepared. Carrie mentioned this earlier. Go the extra mile. Be inquisitive. Do additional research so that you can be informed. You can speak with accuracy and authority, and you can anticipate. It's about building your business acumen, developing the ability and acquiring the skills to understand and interpret business situations, recommend effective actions. It's how you distinguish and differentiate yourself. And it's also the way you build a body of knowledge so that you can be seen as a subject matter expert. The second is harder, maybe for some of us, certainly for me. It's be bold. You step out, push yourself out of your comfort zone. If you are motivated to get the best outcomes for the team and the company, your motives won't be questioned. You will develop a lot of credibility. And whether or not they agree with you, your coworkers will listen and come to respect your input. If you have a suggestion, The worst thing your supervisor can say to you is no or not right now. But taking the initiative shows your commitment and it can inspire others to follow your lead. And it shows that you're invested in the success of the team and not just your own success.
I wish I had told myself those things too.
Me too. And I'm going to steal those for my two daughters. Pass it right along.
Okay.
Carrie, you got anything to add?
I think the one or two things that I'd mention, one is find your trust circle. And this may get back a little bit to vulnerability, but I do think it's really important to find a group of individuals whose opinion you value and who you trust will give you an honest opinion, even if you don't want to hear it. They may be people at AvalonBay. They may be peers and colleagues that you have outside of AvalonBay. Maybe it's family. Maybe it's your spouse or your partner. You know, I was lucky enough over my tenure to generate relationships with folks like the two of you, you know, to help me to really bounce ideas and make sure I was thinking through things. You both know this. I don't know if our listeners do, but I'm also married to somebody at AvalonBay, and he has no problem giving me his unvarnished opinion on what I'm doing or how I'm going to approach things. And I really think it helps to see other perspectives. And even if you don't always agree with it or listen to the advice, it helps you to understand how others may perceive and what the downstream implications might be. And so I think that's something that I've learned over the years. The other thing that I would say is don't sweat the small stuff. So very early on, I did not have the right lens to prioritize. Everything to me was critical. It was material. And so everything was important. And I worked a ton. I mean, I know those that know me in my later years think I also worked a ton, but it was a lot. It was crazy. And so over time, I was able to figure out how to prioritize what deadlines could get missed, what really was critical. And I think figuring that out earlier in your career just will make you happier and more satisfied in what you're doing.
A little easier said than done on that one, but
it is. Hindsight is 20/20.
Yeah, but it is true. The more you can figure out where you really need to focus, it'll make you a lot happier and healthier. Okay, so actually, I'm going to throw you guys for a little loop here. Bear with me. But it kind of goes with that trust circle, because I feel like, you know, first of all, thank you for being part of the trust circle. I think it is critical and it is something that everybody needs to have. It keeps you balanced as you move through your career. But I was watching a show today, this morning, while I was getting ready for work, and they were talking about, the speaker said that behind every leader, the most effective leaders, is someone who helped them get there. So if you think about that person for you, does somebody come to mind, and what did they do for you? So I can, while you're thinking, for me personally, somebody who was an executive officer at the company, AvalonBay. So it was when I came to AvalonBay. They came by one day and said, would you like to go to lunch? And we went to lunch and I thought, why is this person coming to talk to me? I don't know him. I don't know why he would be interested in having lunch with me. And we went to lunch and we talked about, you know, we got to know each other a little bit, talked about my history before coming to AvalonBay, talked about my work at AvalonBay, my aspirations. And then that led to a relationship where I felt comfortable going to this person to talk about challenges, part of my trust circle. And he became sort of an advocate for me as well throughout the organization. So it helped me ascend in my leadership abilities and just my career in general, looking out for me in terms of opportunities. So you don't have to mention the person if you're not comfortable, but can you think of one and what did they do for you?
Okay, I'm going to go first and it's going to embarrass Joanne. Because I think my person is Joanne. But Joanne, here's why. I could point to somebody from my public accounting career. I could point to one of the two CFOs that I've worked for over the years or another executive in the company. But Joanne, you were the first female executive officer. You are somebody who has always been calm, been cool, been thoughtful, and have executed very well. And so you've been somebody that over the course of my career that I've wanted to emulate. And then at some point in time, the relationship changed and you did become part of my trust circle. And I knew that I could come to you with fears, with challenges, or with happiness, and you would help me to validate and or work through an issue. And so I would honestly say that you've helped me grow my career at Avalon Bay, probably more than any of the other executive officers have.
Carrie, thank you so much.
Sorry, I didn't mean to embarrass you on the podcast.
No, you're not embarrassing me. You are clearly and have been for a very long time part of my trust circle. I feel as though we were a dynamic duo, you being obviously more dynamic than me. But it has been a privilege to work with you. In terms of who I might choose, I've had the great good fortune of having tremendous supervisors while here at Avalon Bay, at least since we've been public. And so both of them have been just extraordinary mentors, have really allowed me to have empowered me to take on challenges, to do things that I never thought were possible, that I would never have, if had you asked me 30 years ago, 35 years ago, you know, could you see yourself doing this? I would have laughed, literally laughed. But I guess it would have to be after I started working for Tom Sargent. Tom basically asked me to take on a very large financing transaction, by today's standards, very small, but it was impactful for the company. And we were neck and neck in the market against EQR, if you can believe it, at that time, who was trying to pursue the same transaction. It was messy. It involved, you know, a lot of different assets and a lot of different financings. And Tom had basically the confidence to completely step away and trusted that I would come back to him with issues and challenges. And for me, that was the point at which I realized I was capable, because he allowed me to take that risk, to take the chance, to step out. And it really set the tone for the balance of my career, because I felt like nothing was insurmountable for me. Sure, there would be problems. Sure, I would not get 100% of the things done well or correctly, but I would have the ability and the support of the company to kind of work through whatever issues came up. So that was probably a critical point for me in my career in terms of how I saw myself contributing to the company.
Perfect. So the reason I asked that is because as leaders, none of us got here by ourselves, right? And when you talk about lessons in leadership, to be an effective leader, you really have to look out for others and to help others get to the next level. That's part of your responsibility as a leader. And all of us have benefited from those that came before us to get us to where we are and to help us be successful, to give us the confidence to perform and to succeed. So, and I just thought the timing was kind of fortuitous, since it was just, I was watching it this morning. I said, huh, that's interesting. So let's go to our very last question. Let's wrap it up with what drew you to Avalon Bay? And why did you stay for so many years?
I'm afraid that we could have the same answer. So as I mentioned earlier, I was lucky enough to know Avalon Bay before I came to work here full time. So not a lot of people get afforded that opportunity. Normally you have a few hours of interviews, you meet a few people, and then it's a leap of faith. I had the privilege of being able to work with the management team, with the accounting team, and I understood the company's operations before coming on full time, but I was bought in from day one. And the reason was because of the culture. I did believe in the core values. I really appreciated the fact that while we were a public company of our size, we still very much had a private company feel. It still felt personal. Executives felt accessible. And it felt like a company to me that had a lot of growth runway for both the company and for myself. And that's probably why I've stayed for as long as I have, is because of the growth of the company and the faith that they put in me. I was afforded a lot of opportunity that I might not have otherwise gotten along the way. And so I was able to oversee functions that I probably had no real right to be able to oversee based on my background. I participated in transactions. Every day was different, where in other places, every day may have been the same. And so I really appreciate sort of what I had at Avalon Bay for the last 22 years.
Perfect. Joanne?
My first job out of graduate school was with Xerox in their real estate subsidiary at the time. And it was there that I got bitten by the real estate bug. Just remember, I was a finance person. So it was really exciting to be able to combine something as dry as finance with the dynamism of real estate transactions, which to this day, I absolutely love. So when Xerox liquidated their subsidiary, I knew I wanted to stay in real estate and I continued my career in finance working at Trammell Crow Residential, a multifamily real estate developer, which ultimately became Avalon Properties through our IPO in 1993. And I have to say that it has been incredible to see how much the company has grown and changed since our early days. There was a tremendous learning curve involved in transitioning from a small private developer to a large public going concern. And it's very, very special to think about the fact that AvalonBay is one of only about 10% or so of REITs that went public in its vintage, so in the early 90s, that remains public today. And it is one, and there are even fewer of these, that has grown from strength to strength since that time. I believe that the enduring attribute of the company that has contributed significantly to our success, and it's really to a large extent what has kept me at the company for so long, is that it has remained a platform focused on excellence and growth. And these are things that leadership and associates have been able to rally behind over a long period of time. And the focus has become embedded in our DNA. And what excites me now is the ability to see where leadership and associates are going to take the company using this DNA going forward, because it is a far more fertile environment today than it was when we launched and went public. The, you know, the odds were, you know, and the stats prove it out, you know, many were not going to survive. But I think the focus on excellence and growth is something that has driven so much of how we run our assets, how we deal with our residents, how we treat associates, and how we grow the business. I think it's going to generate many opportunities to come, and I'm excited to see what that brings.
Yes, excellence and growth. So that is what has kept so many of us here for so long. And when you're looking to grow your careers, the advice I'd say from this group is to look for a company that champions both. Okay, let's real quick, we'll do a very quick lightning round and then we'll wrap it up. Favorite go-to app?
My favorite go-to app relates to my Apple Watch. I recently got an Apple Watch. There's a health app on there that allows you to kind of monitor yourself, especially if you are going to do some training for athletic events, which I am hoping to do. And so it is just, it has opened a new world for me and I couldn't live without it. And I can't believe I didn't get one 10 years ago.
Okay, Carrie.
Okay, mine is Facebook. I am old school. I'm not on Instagram. I'm not on X, but I need an hour of social media kick every morning.
Okay. All right. Favorite binge-worthy TV show? I have to know the answer. Carrie.
I don't want to go first because mine is so embarrassing compared to what I'm afraid Joanne's is going to be. So I love all things reality TV on Bravo. And so Jason and I are currently watching old seasons of Southern Charm, which is a bunch of 30-year-olds based in Charleston who did nothing but drink and fight. It's mindless fodder, but it's so fun and you get hooked.
All right. Well, Carrie, you're going to be surprised by mine. I am all things Netflix. And my guilty pleasure, while I am working out, mind you, is Love is Blind. I have seen every season, including Japan, two Brazils, Germany, and the UK. You know, it is the one guilty pleasure that I indulge myself with. So
Joanne, did your girls turn you on to Love is Blind?
Oh, no. I turned them on to it. I turned them on to it, Elaine.
My girls watch it and they watched the UK one and I tried to watch it with them and I couldn't understand. I couldn't follow it. Okay. Last one. Let's just end on. So you both have retired, sadly for us, wonderfully for you, as of year end 2024. What are your plans going forward?
One of the things that I have long loved is cycling, and I have not had the ability to really indulge, at least in terms of getting in very good shape and training and doing longer bike rides. And so my goal for this year, once the weather gets a little warmer and I can get back out on the road, I'm inside right now, is to kind of train for a century, which is a 100-mile bike ride.
Awesome. Yeah. Carrie?
I don't have anything that earth-shattering, quite honestly. That I would give myself 6 months to sort of settle in and just see how life played out. So I am learning to cook, because pre-retirement, I cooked 0 nights a week. And now at least I put food on the table from the grocery store once or twice. I am going to the gym and Pilates more consistently. And we recently adopted a 1-year-old puppy. So I'm looking forward to that.
So your life has totally changed with your puppy.
Yes,
for sure.
Yes.
Great. Okay. Well, Joanne and Carrie, thank you so much for taking the time to share your insights with our audience. It has been great seeing you again. I have missed you. And I know I've gained a few pearls of wisdom that I can apply. And I know our listeners will benefit from your lessons in leadership as well. Thank you.
It's been lovely spending time with both of you. Thanks so much, guys.
Yep. Thank you.
And that's a wrap for today's episode of Speak Up. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and found practical inspiration to fuel your own personal and professional journey. If you'd like to hear more, be sure to follow Avalon Bay Communities on social media and subscribe to the show for updates on future episodes. A big thank you to our hosts, guests, Women's Leadership Network members, and to all of you for listening.